It's been 10 years since comedian Jeffrey J first came on Feast of Fun to talk about being one of the few openly trans men working in stand-up comedy. Identifying more as a comedian than to any gender, Jeffrey J has experienced the highs and lows of show business, from struggling as an entertainer in LA, hosting and starring in a kids streaming television show, and going through rehab and coming out stronger than ever.
In the new reality podcast series, Being Trans, Jeffrey J shocked audiences on the premiere episode when he said he often blew off his hormone therapy because he didn't like how it made him feel. Horny and aggressive. Today, our dear friend Jeffrey J joins us to look back on 10 years on Feast of Fun and his new project, Being Trans, an unscripted doc reality podcast series that follows four transgender individuals living in LA.
Plus, Madonna's in the news again, creating an NFT for charity featuring a tree growing out of her hoo-ha. Ooh la la. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hi there.
Ooh.
Hey.
It's a reality podcasting star, Jeffrey J.
Yeah, it sure as heck is, buddy.
Wow. Hi. You know, it's the 10-year anniversary of you being on Feast of Fun.
No way.
Yeah, it was like 10 years ago. I was looking through the Advocate online or something like that, and they're like, 10 queer comedians you should know. And then there was Jeffrey J. I'm like, this guy looks cute. Let's see what he's all about.
Well, it was also slim pickings.
You were actually the only one who answered my email.
Yeah, I was answering all of the emails back then.
No, it's not necessarily that the case is that we were looking at some of these other comedians. They were like, yeah, I don't really, you know.
They were all great in their own way.
Sure, but just not in our way.
Yes.
Yeah, and some of us had glow ups.
Mm-hmm.
But in some ways, you're like Peter Pan. You're this supernatural being that takes us into a magical Neverland place.
I have definite Peter Pan syndrome for sure.
Yeah. I mean, let's kind of rewind the clock. And now, for people who don't know who Jeffrey J is, you are the star of the Kardashians' new podcast enterprise, Being Trans. It's a podcast reality television reality show that follows four transgender people through their navigating through their lives. Just like the Kardashians, you go shopping, you whine about a lot of stuff, and you
take it up the butt.
Get cum on your back.
Oh, my God.
Just kidding.
None of that stuff happens except for the shopping.
Except for the shopping. Well, you know, there's an episode that I thought was really interesting, but we'll get to that in a minute here, where you're talking to doctors and your friends who happen to be doctors about your testosterone replacement therapy.
Yeah.
And you're like, eh. You're like, I know I've worked hard to be trans. I know this stuff, but you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's something Jeffrey's wrestled with for years.
Yes. Yeah. And it's frustrating as your friend and as somebody who knows you well. I consider you family at this point, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, I'm just like screaming at the iPod or the podcast player. I'm like, what are you doing?
I know. Turns out everybody felt that way about that episode. I get the most calls, and it's not all out yet. There's a couple more episodes coming out, and then we'll see how all the reactions are. But yeah, for that one, that was the one I got the most calls about, because everybody was just like, you gave me so much anxiety there, and why aren't you doing your shot? And if you need to do your shot, you need to come to me. But it's been that way forever. You guys know, you have been there and seen me freak out about it. And
one time you brought $100 bill and you said, do you know anyone who has testosterone? I'll pay you double the price for it.
And I was like, sure did. Yeah, because it was hard to find doctors back then, and you had to pay so much money for it. And so it was easier just to kind of get it.
Get it meaning buy it underground or not from a physician.
Yeah, or not underground, because I wasn't ever getting it underground. But I would basically just find the doctors who would just prescribe it as if, because I've been taking it for so long, so I had a prescription. I would just get people to keep giving me the same prescription. But then I would ask if I was taking the wrong amount. And the doctors I would go to would say, no, you're doing the correct dose. And it was about four times what I should have been taking.
And you know, to clarify here, so here's some medical background. So for a cisgender heterosexual man at the age of 50, a testosterone replacement therapy dosage is 200 milligrams a week. Or just remember the number 200.
And
that brings you back. You know, some people do a little bit higher, some people a little lower, but that's the ballpark there. For what you were taking when I met you, you were taking 100, half of that dosage. And on the podcast, being trans, the doctor is like going, that even is a little too high for you because you're Peter Pan and Peter Pan needs Tinkerbell dust.
Fairy dust.
Fairy dust. More than anything. It's not true. But no, I mean, that they were saying that you may have been taking too much and then like half a milligram or 500, you know, half a.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Even 0.25. 0.25 is what I take now.
50 milligrams a week.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I would rage out. And I hated it. I hated the feeling so much. So I wouldn't do my testosterone for like a year at a time sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And you got so, in trouble with your doctor.
So much trouble. I got
I was screaming at you one time. I was like, your bones aren't going to like that because you don't have any estrogen. You got a hysterectomy. You don't have any ovaries. And then so the doctor's like, let's put you on TRT, testosterone replacement therapy. And you're like, but needles, yucky. And I was Jeffrey, come on. You got to man up.
I know. But the thing is, I don't want to.
So in some ways, when it comes to gender, you're in Neverland.
Yeah, it really is. And I love that, though. It's kind of how I feel at home. And while I do identify as a trans man, and I kind of more identify with the trans than the man. And I love that. And it makes me a very empathetic human and not very sexual. And I also really love that.
But, you know, in terms of your gender identity, you don't use the term non-binary because you're over the age of 30.
Yeah.
All people listening to this are like, so much shade.
Yeah.
Is that, do you think that's a young person's game?
It's a generational thing I've started to observe, you know, and people that are younger tend to not say they're trans. They said they're non-binary, even though they've had the same procedures and present in similar ways as Jeffrey does.
Well, yeah. Well, I think it, too, is a freedom of language that we didn't have. Mm. That if it were that now that it's getting more acceptable, I think more and more my friends are identifying as non-binary, and I really love it so much. But for me, I think I was taking such baby steps because no one even knew what trans was back then in Texas, and it was so that I could, who could go that far. You're just trying to go as far as you can without people not hiring you and all of the things that we went through back in 2001 in Texas.
Well, it's also a difficult thing for you to juggle because at your heart, you not necessarily identify as male or female as much as you identify as a comedian.
Yeah, 100%.
And a comedian is a trickster, is someone who is, you know, going to fuck with you and make you think and laugh at something that's really serious. And so for you, it's a juggling act in talking about these things that are, you know, life or death circumstances. And at the same time, you're like, just relax. Let's have fun, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I think I just really don't care about the labels as much as like I like presenting as male and I don't like feminine pronouns. But yeah, that's me. And it's just easier for me to I'm just me. And definitions really matter to other people.
You were talking about in your stand up in the reality series being trans as you came out as trans to your mom. And she had a harder time because you guys come from a very progressive, liberal, political family in Texas. and she came out as a Republican.
Yeah. Yes.
That's and I imagine that must have gone over more challenging and gone over like a lead balloon in your family than you. They're like, well, we're relieved that you're not an asshole.
Yeah. And she's so lovely too. She's the loveliest human.
When she's not fighting to take away women's right to have an abortion, but
nope. No, she's not. And she's such an ally that, she's a judge that, really it's helpful to have in the court system.
So what does it mean to be a Republican and a judge?
Well, she's family law. So family law doesn't really matter how you identify, I guess, in the family court system, because you're just making sure that children go to the correct homes and that adoptions go through and that, you know, divorces are fair. And my mother does that without an air of judgment. And so.
Well, so was she just adopting the Republican moniker so she could win an election? Because.
Yeah. No, she's definitely a Republican, but identifying as something like that doesn't mean that you, it's just like being trans. There's a lot of facets of being a Republican, just like being, we have a lot in common, Republicans and transgender people.
But are voters in where your mother is running for political office aware of her famous son?
They ended up being so. In the beginning, you know, we don't talk about it a whole lot, but people know, and she doesn't deny me, and it's so, so lovely. And also, it doesn't matter where you are. People exist, trans, gay, yeah, et cetera. And everyone's got some of us in their family these days. So it's getting less and less.
Well, so, you know, like Caitlyn Jenner is in some ways indirectly involved in producing this show, and she's a Republican.
She is not even slightly involved in the show whatsoever.
wait. So how did, because you were positioning me that this is like a Kardashian project.
No, I didn't say that because I don't know either. I just know that some of the producers came from.
Oh, I see. So
that. Uh-huh. And the only reason I even know that is because of the articles that came out. I was just interacting with the main producers and things throughout the process, which was something that we shot in 2021.
Yeah.
Until it finally came out, it was a big old thing.
Was it a challenge to sort of be thrusted into a reality podcast environment? Because it's kind of a new format here with other trans people you may not have been familiar with.
Yeah, it is weird. It's very weird at first because you also have to kind of train yourself to talk differently a little bit. You have to both be real because here's the great thing about this. Reality shows can be all about drama and not very realistic. And we had a group of people who really wanted to see real life. So you have to kind of do real life things, but also talk about things in a way that you wouldn't because nobody can see what you're talking about. So you have to train your brain to say people's names more and you have to talk about what's going on in the scenario a lot. So something happens to you and you have to kind of.
Sorry. So my God, my apologies. We just lost the last 2 minutes of that conversation.
Okay. So when do we leave off?
Yeah. So, basically in let me just position this again so we can get it. So in the first episode, let's get this out of the way. They pair you off with Sai, a non-binary transgender legal assistant from LA who transitioned after marrying their husband, Robert, and having a baby. The show's description says, while things seem great on the surface, Sai confesses they've been putting off having a tough conversation with their spouse, Robert, about their transition and how it may affect their romantic relationship. It's really none of our business to know what their sex life is like, but it is sort of the meat of the first episode. Let's get this out of the way.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because me and Sai, here's what's really weird. I don't think I've ever been a part of any show where everybody kind of, we all became best friends for realsies, and just kind of, we all clicked, which is very weird. So Sai is now one of my best friends in the world. And the things that we kind of talk about sometimes is the things that came up are things that I don't know if we would have originally talked about had we not been all together and on something where we were expressing ourselves to the public. So like the idea of having certain conversations with Robert about like, who, how do you identify, Robert? It didn't matter that much initially, but then it was something to interestingly explore about ourselves. So, it's actually really cool to have the conversations about with Sai and Robert, because it's like, man, I've never even thought about how me and Emma identify. Like, do we identify as queer or straight or whatever?
Well, right now you're in a relationship with a trans woman, so you're in a heterosexual relationship.
You guys are straight.
Yeah. That's what people say. Are straight. That's weird.
Do you feel that way though?
Do you feel straight?
No, not even. No. No, my biggest fear would be ever losing the queer community, because it's the thing that makes me feel at home. It's the people that I love and people who make me different, who challenge me. And it would be heartbreaking to lose the queer community.
Do you have like nightmares? You wake up and they're like, I'm not trans. I'm not queer.
Oh my God. I had the weirdest moment when I first transitioned 15 years ago. I finally started passing, and I didn't realize, I guess, how much I was passing, or I don't know what I didn't realize, but I was a lesbian up until I was 21. And so I'm standing in line at the movies and I see this lesbian couple and they're holding hands and they kiss or something. And I looked at him and I like gave him the lesbian, like nods up like, hey, I see you. Like, hey, y'all are you, hey, we're family. And the girl turned to me and she goes, we're not here to impress you. And I was like, oh no, I look like a straight guy. Oh no. And it was this moment of like, oh, I used to be able to be like, hey, I'm also a lesbian. And I just look like the worst cis man in that moment. It was terrifying.
You were your own toxic masculinity.
Yeah. Oh, and you can't explain fast enough. Like, no, I'm transgender. I used to be you. I was a lesbian. Like, you can't even get those words out. So you're just stuck in this moment.
That is interesting. Well, it's interesting. You know, the couple that they feature is how it'll be
Sai and Robert.
Sai and Robert, how they navigate that relationship in the future, because, you know, he identifies as a straight man, right? And so now he's in a relationship with somebody who's transitioning, and how's that going to end up?
Right.
And how will he identify in the future?
Yeah. Well, and I think that the thing is that it doesn't matter. Mm. It really doesn't how you identify. You are with the people that you're with, and identities are genuinely for other people. And like, when would that come up otherwise? When would it matter? When would somebody say, hey, how do you identify? And that would ever affect your relationships or your job or anything. It shouldn't.
Mm.
So that's why that is so interesting to me, because it's like, hey, we never really would have talked about this. And then we did. And then we were kind of bothered by it, maybe. Mm-hmm. And well, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we attach identities to ourselves sometimes. And then as you confront your life and you look at it, you'd be like, well, I guess that I thought that was my identity, but in the end, it really wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, you know, we live in a capitalistic society where consumer culture is tied to identity, you know? Mm-hmm. And so many people like shop for things that then they can use to tie to their identity. Like the International Mr. Leather Contest and Conference is basically a conference of whores, people persons.
Our favorite kind of people.
Our favorite kind of people, my community. And, you know, and it's something to say that, you know, the vast majority of the experience is literally shopping. You know, there's two floors of expo booths all selling you harnesses, lubricants, dildos of exorbitant shapes, sex toys, harnesses, you know, outfits, hoods.
Yeah. And if you want to get into leather, a lot of times, you know, there people will tell you, oh, there's cheap. You can get gift. People will give you things. You can buy things secondhand. But otherwise, it's, you know, super expensive. A lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
But when we're navigating, you know, identity, especially in this, it's really important to not let things you buy define you. And that's the same thing like a drag con in LA right now. You know, people are like, I'm a drag queen because I buy wigs and I buy makeup and I like to put on costumes. And I'm like, you know, Mr. Rogers said it. It's you who we like. It's not the clothes you wear. It's not how you comb your hair. You know, the very part of deep inside you, that's what counts. And when we're trying to sort of, you know, because that part of us lives so deep inside our minds and our bodies, it's sometimes really easy to get distracted by that shiny object at the store that we think by buying it, it's going to give our life meaning or purpose. And ultimately, you know, it's just to move money around in the economy.
Yeah. Or to give yourself that little, you know, boost of
the boost,
you
know, dopamine. The adrenaline.
Yeah.
You know, so that it's interesting, you know, to have the producers of the Kardashians working on this show, because in a lot of ways, like, I'm expecting you to sit in the back of a, you know, SUV and complain that the store you went to buy, you know, shoes at is out of the shoe that you like. And you're like,
yeah,
yeah.
I think it was weird too, because like nobody kind of, when they and we went into this, we kind of didn't know what it was going to be. But the big push was that it was about extreme empathy. And the thing that hooked me that I said yes to was the network that they're on, Luminata. It, their whole thing is they want to push extreme empathy. And the thing that they said was, we want to tell the stories beyond just the fact that you're trans, which as a person who's been in this industry, just like you guys have, for as long as we have, most of the time, I am allowed maybe one other thing other than the fact that I'm trans. But you get one word attached to your name, transgender comedian, the blank this. And then no one ever asks another question about your life. And this was an opportunity to say, like, hey, we do other stuff and we have fears and hopes and dreams and we have careers. And trans is just the thing that we had to deal with in order to be ourselves and do those other things. And that's pretty badass.
I agree. It's important not to define yourself, you know, especially when you're naming a podcast, not to use the word trans if you don't want to be known as just the trans thing or person, right?
Yeah.
So that, why do they name it Being Trans?
Yeah, because
like, yeah,
because it's the beginning of something. So yeah. And I don't know what I can speak to, but that's what this one was. This was like the lives of these people and what it was. And I think if you hadn't put the name in the title, it would be denying what this whole season was.
Well, that's been a problem with us. And, you know, when we met you, we had just changed our name from Feast of Fools to Feast of Fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think, how many years have we been doing this podcast now? 17 years, right?
Yeah.
And we've known you for about 10 of those years. And and part of it was like, you know, people were like, what are you? You're like, why don't you put the word gay in the title?
We kind of did. Gay fun show.
Gay talk show, gay fun show. Mm-hmm. And part of it was just so people who were searching for something would find you. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is then people were like, well, I'm not gay, so this doesn't mean something to me.
Yes. Which that part's important too, because I used to, you know, when I would do colleges, I would tell, because I toured, for people who don't know, I toured colleges as my career for the past 10 years. And when I would do college shows, I learned very quickly on that if you advertise that Jeffrey J. Transgender Comedian was coming, that the gay organization would come, but that's about it. So then about one or two years into the college circuit, I started telling them when they would book me, don't book me as a trans comic, just say comedian. And I would get, you know, hundreds of people out to each show. And then guess what? I don't get up and just talk about trans stuff. I'm a comedian. So then the frat guys would come out and the sorority girls, and then everyone who thought I don't have anything in common with you would come out, and it would be a kick-ass show. And they would leave knowing something about trans people, understanding it more, learning that I'm a plain Jane normal person, almost boring at times. And they didn't even realize they learned anything because they just went to a comedy show.
And, you know, in the time that we've been together, you've changed so much and, you know, been in new relationships. You've struggled with addiction. You started a web series because you were sort of climbing. What was the name of that guy who like was doing these like pranks and then he became like a millionaire because he was doing a kids show on YouTube?
Yeah, Blippi.
Blippi. What happened to Blippi?
I don't know. Oh, Blippi got so big that he hired a new guy to be him and then just like retired. And now there's another Blippi in the world who's still just making him money.
And he's called Lippi?
Blippi with a B.
Oh, no, but it'd be good as like it's Mario and Wario and stuff.
Oh, he's Blippi, like Reverso Blippi.
Blippi, Plumpy.
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
He's like, hey, kids, is this a ball? It's kind of like a low budget Blues Clues.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you started jumping on, you were like, you know, I like kids. I'm probably better at this.
Well, didn't you teach kids acrobatics or something? Gymnasts?
Yes. Yeah. So I taught kids, major and minor motor function and did like Mommy and Me stuff. And I was a swim lessons instructor for years. And I taught children's gymnastics. In fact, I did that to like celebrities' kids and stuff like that.
I was
going to
say, these aren't normal kids. These are like celebrity kids, right?
Yeah.
Like the parents don't even come and their nannies bring them in, right?
Yeah, they're hordes of nannies and security guards and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, fascinating. And so I did that and I know a lot about it. And in quarantine, the kids weren't allowed to go out and parents were at home with their kids. So I created the show called JJ Time, which was based on all the stuff I knew about major and minor motor functions. And it was a little bit Blues Clues, a little bit Mr. Rogers. And I had all these like toddlers that were obsessed with me and I would get these videos from parents going like JJ, more JJ. And then sometimes I would like a kid would have a quarantine birthday party and JJ would come and get on FaceTime and like watch them open their presents and stuff. And it was kind of like them having a preschool teacher or someone who would, you know, interact with them so the parents could have a break or go to the bathroom. And that's what I did during quarantine.
And you know, why did you stop? Like, was there some horrible scandal that?
No, I got cast. The great thing is that I have luckily been scandal free.
You're so wholesome, by the way, for people who don't know you.
Yeah, I know. I am the most. My favorite credit throughout my career will always be when I was comedy writer for Feast of Fun.
Oh,
Still are. You just don't work very hard.
You don't send me the shows, buddy.
You're working on your intro for your own show. you're going to work on writing it. But no, I mean, so in terms of like, because I thought it was an interesting direction and something, you know, as a fan of that type of programming myself, it is something like, you know, as queer people, we sort of like edit ourselves out of the world of children's lives.
Yeah.
You know, and I was a public school, elementary school teacher for a while. And it was like, and it wasn't, you know, I loved working with the kids. It's just the parents drove me nuts, you know? And people it's like working retail. Like they come at you super hot, super inflamed, crazy. And I'm like, I'm not even the teacher of the classroom that you're having a problem with.
Teachers say it's even worse now because of cell phones and social media and messaging. It's like, they're like, they'll have parents call them at like 2 a.m. in the morning. And like, what?
They were doing that with me too. And it was like a situation where I was just like, okay, I'm just, you know, I can't control that. And the school wouldn't do anything about it. So I just quit, you know? And it was a situation too, where the, like the parents would treat me different when they knew that I was gay.
Yes, that's huge. When I was first working in the mommy and me type classes, I was told because they didn't know I was trans. I was in the closet then because I was in Texas.
Yeah,
and they told me that I need to tone down the gay because the dads are going to get scared of me being around their sons, and these were toddler boys. And then I eventually left because it was so. I mean, it was ridiculous. And the judgment and people assuming that you would ever imagine anything like that. So, and then when I got to California, eventually, I became like a Manny kind of, and
did you say Manny?
Yeah, I did say Manny.
It's a nanny who's a man.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a Manny. And when the parents found out that I was trans, I became like the most popular Manny.
Aww.
And it was fascinating to me. And I asked one of the moms one day, and I was like, why do you think that is? And she goes, you know what it is? I'm not even slightly scared of you. And I was like, okay, offensive. But like,
I have muscles. Sometimes. No, I'm just kidding.
Thank you. No, she said, I'm not even slightly scared of you. And she's like, and you, because I know spotting techniques and how to like hold a child properly and, you know, protect their muscles and whatever, and know how to help with their minor major motor function, they would go, you know how to roughhouse and play with them. You're so active and I'm not scared at all because you're not really a guy. And again, another thing that I was like, okay, offensive, but also lovely.
They're like, I have. Wait, I'm on 200. What is it? 100 milligrams of testosterone replacement therapy, lady. You should be scared.
Yeah, but even when I like growl, it's like not. Everyone's like, oh,
it is. You're kind of like a a cute puppy who's like,
yeah,
and you're like, oh, it thinks it's going to bite me,
and I love it.
But, you know, in some degree, it's like, you know, I mean, I've had a lot of conversations with you about, you know, testosterone and your gender identity off camera. And, you know, one thing that I was saying, it's listening to that, I was like thinking to myself, is like, I don't know if it's you're lazy so much when it comes to, you know, just injecting the testosterone. It's like, are you just like not liking the needle process? Or you were saying on the show that it was the feeling of euphoria, sexual drive, and sort of a masculine mindset that you felt was more than you could want or handle.
Yeah, it was too much for me. I've come to identify as asexual, and that was that's a whole adventure in its own. It's just a whole thing, but I love it. I'm just not a very sexual person, and it's lovely. I have
but
so
you're
much
a very
time
affectionate
on my hands.
Person though.
So affectionate, and also I love dates, and I love all of these things. I just honestly, if I have to describe it, I couldn't be bothered with sex. I'm just like, I couldn't be bothered with it. Who, I don't really have the urge, and. It's great.
But when you had a lot of the testosterone, you got really horny and you're like, I don't know what to do with these feelings.
Yeah. And I kind of wasn't a big fan of it. And the thing is,
did you try masturbating?
Well, yeah, it's fine. Yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of great sex. That's the thing that's interesting is that like, I think people assume like, oh, you have some sort of horrific trauma or you don't like it. No, I've had lots of wonderful, great sex and things, but I just kind of couldn't be bothered with it. And I really love my life without that kind of on the brain.
Well, I tell people, it's like, look, we've all had trauma. we've all had bad sexual experiences that shape us and our sexual experience. But there are some people who are asexual and had had bad sexual experiences, and other people who are not asexual and have had bad sexual experiences. And just because we have a negative experience doesn't mean it define us outside of that experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I should be on that show. It's like, part of it is like, you know, because we know you and we're listening to the episode and I'm just screaming like, Jeffrey, no. And
were you, are you injecting the testosterone into your fat?
Subcutaneous. Yeah.
Aren't you like insulin? In your muscle?
You can, but just to clarify this, because in your show, they're like, they're reading the bottle and it says for intramuscular use only.
Yeah.
Testosterone, and maybe, I don't know if you know this or not, but so testosterone is better absorbed when it goes into your muscle tissue than it goes into your fat, but it's still inside your body and eventually it'll become part of your body. So if you're regularly taking, you know, twice a week, what you're doing was like, 50 milligrams of testosterone.
25 now, I think,
right? Or 25?
Yeah, doing 0.25, yeah.
Of so a week. 0.25 of a milliliter of a 200 concentration would be 50 milligrams. Mm. Little science math there.
Such a tiny amount, first off, that it would be almost a waste to do it intramuscular. And also, honestly, the bottom line is, it's a big old needle when you do it in the leg. And I used to like do it wrong, and then my knee would kind of blow up.
Well, you never inject into your, it's not recommended to do in the quads because the risk of infection or complications is much higher. Whereas your butt,
it's a big muscle.
Press down with your thumb. You know, you can get a friend or you can do it yourself. Press down with your thumb and then go into your butt. And there's the butt is a giant muscle. It's the second largest. It's the second largest muscle in the human body.
And what's your largest muscle, Fausto?
My dick. I'm sorry. I did that joke with a friend of mine. He was like, oh man, my legs are so sore. I was like, well, they should be sore. They're the second largest muscle in the human body. And he's like, what's the largest muscle in my body? And I said, my dick. And he's really hot, you know. And he thought it was he's from Greece. And he's like, Fausto, my dick. My dick, Fausto, you so funny, my dick. And he's screaming it at the gym, and I'm like, shh,
at the gym,
he's just screaming it as he sees me, my dick, oh, Fausto, my dick. Oh,
that's
my dick.
So funny, no one else knows the joke and he's just yelling that in the
gym. So I
have
to explain the joke to the gym and they're like, it's not that funny.
No, it's not. But now you're stuck in this joke explaining situation. Especially in the middle of the gym.
And a dick's not a muscle anyway.
It is if you use it right. Well, you know, it's also funny if you actually see my dick.
It's kind of
that's the real like, joke, Jeffrey. That's the real joke.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like the brain. You only use 10% of it.
Well, you also have to worry about like the size of the needle you use too, because sometimes people they're like, use this needle, and it's this giant, you know.
Oh my god, that was driving me crazy. Yeah, so you use a bigger needle to pull the liquid out, the oil out of the vial, and then use a smaller one to inject it. And you can warm it up once it's in the syringe. Run it over a hot tap water because it makes the viscosity not as liquid. Yeah. And so when you're putting that little amount in your glutes twice a week, no big deal.
Yeah. But you get to basically use like one size up from a diabetes needle if you do it subcutaneous. Mm. It's like basically a see-through needle. Mm-hmm. It's the freak out scene of me. By the way, everyone is like yelling at me and calling and saying, what the hell? Do your stupid shot. And they're like, how big was that needle? That needle must have been huge. You basically can't see that needle. It's so tiny. And also, it usually takes me like 8 times as long. And they cut that down. That took so long. And I did it faster than ever. It usually takes me like an hour.
What?
Oh, Jeffrey, next time you're in Chicago, I'll show you how to inject. This is ridiculous.
Well, no, I just
this is a promise.
Like one of
we'll
those
do
pumps, like a morphine pump, but with testosterone.
No, because that's expensive. Listen, save your money, use it for sushi, traveling experiences. Testosterone replacement therapy should not cost you anything. Yeah, I'm your big brother. I will show you how to do this.
I know. y'all are lovely.
So, I mean, you know, in terms of like the show, you know, also your friend asked you, what does testosterone feel like for you?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was an interesting conversation because, you know, in people in recovery and sobriety, they do have a hard time with testosterone replacement therapy through injections because some of them have, you know, really negative associations with needles.
Oh.
And also, you know, it does heighten your feelings. A lot of trans men like you have said to me, like, in the past, it's great because it's like, it's my dreams are coming true. I'm happy. There's a euphoria when it comes to injecting testosterone. But then the, you know, the other side of it that you talk about on the show is that it just makes you like, you know, scratch the walls, horny. And it's like makes you it's not that it makes you aggressive. It turns off your flight or fight response. So circumstances mm-hmm. that you would just leave, you stay and you're like, OK, asshole, let's engage.
Yeah. Also, too, because like I think putting in the amount that I was putting into my like small framed body is it was genuinely like going through puberty all the time. Instead of maintaining testosterone like you are supposed to, it was like pushing yourself to an intense the reason that teenagers are insane. Because I'm going through the puberty level of testosterone. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. Like, and you're also, how much do you, I don't mind asking, your height and weight. You're a much smaller person than the average trans man, even, you know?
Yeah, I'm 5'4 and I'm 105 pounds.
So, you know, in terms of like, you know, the testosterone ratio to your body would be a lot higher for the standard dosage.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, you know, hey, asshole, I'm going to stand my ground and tell you what it is. And they say to you, sir, this is a Wendy's. Can I take your order?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the person that, you know, that move where someone puts their hand on your forehead and you keep swinging and you can't reach them because you're holding them with your forehead. I'm built for that. I'm the scrappy do of the group.
Let me at him.
Yeah.
But you're the more popular of the scrappy dudes of the dudes.
So in this series, we'll see more of your story develop.
Yeah, I'm in the whole series, and yeah, you will. And it's really cool because I also my life changed a lot in it, and I really did. I think I got so lucky because reality shows can be so bad. Mm. And I think I stumbled into the one good reality show where they were so respectful and they really did want to serve us instead of use us like a lot of reality shows do, which is just to show like to amp up drama that's not there or whatever. And so because of that, we really opened up and kind of, you know, I got way more vulnerable than I ever have and kind of was just honest about the shit that was going on in my life.
Well, there was a lot of talk in the series about like empathy, right? Having a profound amount of empathy.
Yeah, they did. And I think what it was is like, all four of us, you know, when you're trans or gay, you know, there are times when you open up to the media and that they really take advantage of you or use you for a laugh or like, you know, I had things that I was going to be on years and years ago and then I didn't get on because then they said they couldn't tell that I used to be a girl. Is this the words that they said? We can't use you because you can't tell you used to be a girl. And it was like, oh, that one hit me so hard. That was like back in 2015 or 2017. Mm-hmm. And like,
well, just put on a little lipstick or something, you know?
Yeah. It's like,
I could send it up.
Very important that America be able to peg me as trans. Mm. And so this instead, they, you know, things actually did, they would get like like life complicated. And that's not good for storytelling, because when you're telling a story, you change things as writers. You know, if you throw in too many other things, which is what real life is a bunch of complicated things, it can muddle a story. And so they really had a hell of a time like navigating, okay, cool, how do we make everything like be honest about everything and still tell a story that resonates? And I'll tell you, of the messages I've gotten from people, it's been badass, because a lot of times you'll do something and maybe the trans community isn't on board because they don't feel that it was appropriate to them. And then other times cis people aren't cool with it because it's too far off the spectrum that they can't relate to you because they don't have these same issues. And this one has come from every angle. And even I had like yesterday, somebody reached out, it was really cool, who was like, hey, I just want to let you know that like I've had similar conversations with my husband when it comes to sobriety stuff. It had nothing to do with trans stuff. It was somebody relating to me for my sobriety. And that is the coolest thing ever.
You've been sober for 2 years now.
More than that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, and it's been longer too, but I had a blip, almost 3 years ago. And in the sobriety community, it's very important that you start over.
Do you reset the clock? So that doesn't count.
Yeah.
Do you have to give back the token?
That's what they say. But I thought really it was
finders, keepers, losers, weepers. You're like, you gave me the 2 year token. I'm keeping it. They're like, Jeffrey, bring it back. Yeah.
So you don't add them together. I was sober for 5 years and then sober for 3 years.
Nah, I do that out of respect for the AA community. I'm not an AA person, but I do it out of respect to that community because it is a big community.
Sure.
So if I want a chip, I got to go buy my own chip.
Usually I go get like a AAA.
Yeah, true. I actually usually go and get like a manifesting crystals, like a candle thing. I'm one of those weird manifesty people with like an altar and I like candles.
Did you take any crystals out for and put them under the lunar eclipse last night?
No. Oh my God, I'm the worst.
It's a great way to charge your crystals. I got to.
I do have one in the window, so maybe it did it accidentally.
Mark was put his in a pipe and lit. <It's funny. laughs> No, but I mean, and seriously, like you've gone through struggling with all kinds of addiction. And I've known you for a long time. You know, how is this different from what I've known you to experience in the past?
What this sobriety stint? Yeah, this one's completely different. Well, first of all, I didn't have any other addictions. I was only an alcoholic, which, by the way, is when I went to rehab, I was the only alcoholic. The only one. And it was really hard to convince people that I'm an addict because people are like, oh, what? You drink too many Bud Lights? And I was like, no, I was drinking a gallon of vodka a day.
Oh, wow.
But still, it doesn't compare to heroin or meth or all of the things that people were into. But like, picture me, tiny Jeffrey J. I came in and I was ready to get sober. So I came in excited and positive, and I was just like, I'm here to get sober. And everyone else was like, we hate our lives. And there was a large gang population in the rehab that I went to as well. And so I was just putzing around like Kimmy Schmidt, so excited about life. By the end of rehab, the gang members there, somebody came in and they said the F word.
You mean like fuck you?
No, the slur, the
faggot. Or?
Yep, they said that one.
We can say that
me
on the show because we're a little.
I self-identify as
tinkle linkle.
Yeah,
tinkle linkle.
Yeah,
yeah.
You guys, so they called me that, and so this is like by the end of rehab. That guy, the new guy, called me that. And I have never seen shirts come off so fast in my life. All of the gang members had like come to see me as their little brother. All their shirts came off. Three of them swarmed the guy. Another two just grabbed me by the two shoulders and just carried me away. And they just beat the crap out of this guy.
Why did they take their shirts off?
Because when you get in a fight, you don't want to ruin your nice shirt.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I guess. Or that it's something you can grab or something like that.
If you're going to fight, get naked first. Oil up.
Yeah. They all three of them, it's like that's a thing that they all do. They all just literally three shirts came off and they went at that dude. And so I went in this way, but because I was just unapologetically me and I was like, yeah, of course you can have this. Oh, do you need this? You can have it. Oh, my radio? Yes, you can borrow it. And these are people who had robbed people and, you know, stolen from their whole family. But in rehab, we became a little family and everybody then knew I was trans and people who were like, the most extreme addicts, just like I was family.
So it was thug love.
It was phenomenal. I learned so much.
Did it get you a little horny?
See,
Jeffrey doesn't get horny. Have we not figured that out yet? Or does he like to be horny?
Well, you know, you don't like to be horny, but you were like, oh, my heroes.
Defending my honor.
Yeah. I'd be like, brilliant.
It was like a softening of it. It was like this thing where like in my heart, like I got to see, I learned how to do every drug. I know everything now. I know so much more. Rehab is just
what's
how you
your
learn.
Favorite drug to pretend to do?
Ooh, that's a great question. I don't know, but I learned a lot about, I didn't know that I've learned like where all your veins are. I'll tell you that. I now know where every vein is. We
don't
have a lot
inject
more
the testosterone into
accessible.
The vein.
No, I barely inject it into the places I'm supposed
that's,
to.
That's a like a big fear of a lot of trans men that I've talked to and guys who are juicing for bodybuilding is that they're like, I'm going to hit a vein and I'm going to die. And I'm just like, if you're sticking in your butt, there's not a vein in there that's going to, you know. And if it does, it's not going to kill you.
You know? Yeah. You just got
to
get
bleeding a lot, go
close
to the doctor.
Well, if you have an inflammation, you know, like it looks like a bad bee sting and then it keeps getting worse and worse and it doesn't go away. Get on, you know, go to a doctor right away because it's an infection, you know. Ugh. And a lot of trans people to this day, you know, the good thing is, you know, in 2022, a lot of if you live in an urban environment, chances are you have access to an LGBTQ wellness clinic that will cover the costs or, you know, some of the costs of you transitioning with either estrogen or testosterone replacement therapy. But, you know, our generation came of age where people were like stealing birth control from their roommates or, you know, buying testosterone through underground labs online or through their friends at the gym. And, you know, so it was a lot more dicey and there was not like the doctors didn't know and people didn't feel comfortable telling their doctors about this. And so a lot of people unnecessarily harmed themselves or got into difficult situations because they just weren't communicating with their doctors. You know, for people who are listening to this right now, it's so important to find a doctor that you can tell these things about. If you don't feel comfortable talking about these things with your doctor, even if your doctor's kind of just like icy or difficult or short with you, find somebody else, you know, ask the other trans people or other bodybuilders or people who are doing similar things. There are a lot of forums online and find somebody in your community that you can go to. And, you know, just because you don't have medical insurance, thanks to politicians like your mom.
Yeah.
You know, it might be good to still ask the LGBTQ clinics like Howard Brown here in Chicago, if they have any kind of like programs for people with need. Right. And so if you can prove financial need for transitioning for at least the testosterone and estrogen, they can cover that for you.
Well, healthcare coverage here in the United States is, you know, it's terrible. So, you know, we're lucky we live in a big city like Chicago and there's access to healthcare. Yeah. And even still, people are still having a hard time accessing it here. And so we need to work towards making that something that can be available throughout the country. And you see, like, Chicago has become, you know, it's always been a queer mecca. People have come here, and certainly a lot of trans people have come here to transition because they're like, I can go someplace where I can get the medical needs taken care of. Whereas, like, if you're in the middle of Kansas, that might not be a possibility.
Yeah, there's more and more online stuff too now where you can actually, you can go to a full-on doctor, talk to one online, and then get your prescriptions mailed to you. So it is, that's a really cool thing that I never even considered in, you know, in the past.
Yeah, the pandemic changed everything as far as that. I had my first telehealth session during the early days of COVID. And you know, it was nice. I didn't have to go. I didn't have to wait anywhere. They were right on time. You know, I had my 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And boom, done.
Yeah. It's so nice. I think so many, I mean, COVID was what it was, and it was a horrible thing. But we really, so many great things came out of it.
We just surpassed a million people, Dad. People are still dying from COVID.
Yeah. And also, people don't even understand that it's still going on. It's like they've become so numb to it. But with
they
the
don't
pivoting
even know what to do if happened, they catch COVID. You know, this is the thing about it, too, is like if you catch COVID right now, go get on monoclonal antibodies, call your doctor. If they don't know about it, call your city's, you know, wellness or health, you know, department. Monoclonal antibodies are extremely effective at putting the brakes on COVID. Because COVID, I just got out of COVID. I've had all the Infinity Stones, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, Pfizer.
Did you run the gamut?
I run the gamut. Mark and I, because we were part of the Johnson & Johnson study, we had two Johnson & Johnson vaccines way early.
December of 2020.
Whoa. December 2020. We got the Pfizer, both vaccines of Pfizer in April of 2021. And we had a Moderna booster.
You had one.
I had one. And you had a Pfizer?
I had a Pfizer booster. And then, so on a Tuesday, I went for a regular checkup, got a COVID booster because my doctor was like, no, it's 4 months for you, not 6 months, because I was going to do it like sometime this May. And so on that Tuesday, I got another Pfizer because that's what they had. They recommend next time I do it, get a Moderna. But I got it on Tuesday, and then Thursday, Fausto started developing symptoms of COVID. And so I never got COVID. I did four tests. I did a PCRT test and everything, and I never got it. And we lived in the home. I didn't breathe on him or have him breathe on me, but and I tried
we stopped,
to open the windows.
Having oral sex and making out. But that's because you're married.
So. Yeah. But I never got it. That was just like, and I credit the vaccine with saving me from that, because when I did get the vaccine, it was like, I kind of had like, you know, kind of a little bit of symptoms, you know what I mean? I was just kind of like a little congestion, that kind of stuff. But it all, you know, all went away.
So monoclonal antibodies, if you catch it, regardless of whether you had vaccines or not, please go get vaccinated. You know, I don't understand, like, I understand like conservative people not wanting to get vaccinated because there's like, it's aligning with their, you know, the information they're being exposed to. But progressive people, like, there's this weird thing, you know, like very, very liberal people and very, very conservative people are both anti-vaxxers. You know, I don't get that. But if you do catch COVID, run, not walk, call your doctor, call a medical professional, ask for monoclonal antibodies. And this is something also I learned from bodybuilding forums. There's a food safe dye called methylene blue, that has been used in the past to treat, AIDS patients with Kaposi sarcoma. It's been used to fight malaria. What? It's a very powerful antiviral and antibacterial, and it's a nootropic. So what that does is it stimulates circulation in your brain, and it's a wellness booster, you know? And I feel like with those two, I've never had, Jeffrey, with the exception of antibiotics, a bigger pause, a stop button on a disease. Like within 3 or 4 hours, I was like, COVID? What COVID? Like I was like, in the morning, I was so sick, I couldn't swallow. And I had the injections around 11 a.m. And by like 5 or 6 p.m., the swelling was down. Like it was incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. So definitely we're giving people a lot of medical information on this show. So, you know, we don't want to be like Joe Rogan. Please talk to your doctor about this stuff. You know, this is just anecdotal information.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the takeaway from my show. Cause that's the same thing. That's the same takeaway from the actual being trans too. After that first episode, it's talk to your doctor, just talk to your doctor,
but talk to other doctors too. Cause you know, sometimes the doctors don't know, you know, it's like, when you go to a tech store and your phone's not working and you meet, you know, you get support with somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, you know?
Yeah.
So they may not give you the best service, you know?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't hurt to, if you get a second opinion, a therapist, personal trainer, any kind of, you know, personality related situations, it is kind of like falling in love with somebody. Cause you have to really, you know, click and compliment each other well.
Mm-hmm. And they need to challenge you and you need to challenge each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just today I sent a "Will you accept this rose" to my bodybuilding coach. So we're in a relationship now for the next year, me and my bodybuilding coach.
Oh.
And it's amazing. A beautiful romance.
Mark going, "Oh, that's lovely. I'll have more the house to myself for."
It's true. I'll become a gym widow.
But, well, it's only one time a
it's
week.
It's only 1 year. Yeah, it's only one year. The thing is, though, like, I don't know. I'm not going to have enough room in the refrigerator to feed this beast.
Oh, my it's God, I know.
I'll just eat some of your food.
And it's just food and eating, and it'll be a lot. But I'm going to work out hard, too, so I'm going to kind of, like, siphon off of whatever Fausto learns.
So in the next year, I just turned 50, and in the fall of 2023, I'm going to be doing a bodybuilding competition.
Amazing.
You know, and it's like, it's just like being trans, only, you know, you're eating more.
Yeah. You're like the Bowflex guy. I'm 50 years old and I'm in the best shape of my life.
Fausto loves the Bowflex guy.
You know, the thing about it is in my generation, we didn't have internet. And so those late night infomercials, especially in the mid to late 80s of Soloflex.
That's the one you liked.
Was revolutionary, you know, and you're looking at like men's bodies on television. They were sort of like, they didn't lift weights. They didn't have a lot of exercise or muscle, but you know, compare that to like just Star Trek, Strange New Worlds with, Captain Pike and, Gregory Peck as Spock. And they're taking their shirts off every other episode. And you're like, these guys are lifting motherfucking weights and juicing like fuck, you know? And I was like, this is the most jacked Star Trek crew yet.
Muscle in space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is hard. You have to work twice as hard in space.
You have to lift as strong. Yeah. Cause there's no gravity.
Yeah.
Well, in Star Trek, they have, inertial dampers, whatever that is, but you know, so, so you can lift and exercise. You were saying that you wanted to come on Let's Grow Big together because you have abs now.
Yeah. Listen, I will never identify as a human with abs. I say that I have a tummy. I like the word tummy.
That's not what you said to me beforehand.
I have an ab or two coming in.
An ab?
Yeah, an ab or two.
A singular
ab or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
How's this happening?
I don't like going to the gym. I hate it so much for a million reasons. I don't identify with those people. I also have a tiny body.
Those people.
Yep. You guys, I'm being real judgy
Did
here.
Did we ever
you
take
two.
You to the gym?
No, we've not gone
no.
to the gym, Jeffrey.
Oh my God. I've been like, take
well,
your kid to work
you're like,
day.
You're like, you're like a gymnastics coach with kids, but you know, when it comes to your own body, it's like, you're not willing to listen to the other Jeffrey J's wanting to encourage you to do a somersault.
Nah, I'd rather be able to skip very well and perfectly and do a handstand rather than like get big old muscles. So instead I do, I've always played dance games. And so I got, my brother for Christmas got me a virtual reality, the Oculus Quest. And I started playing it every day as an actual genuine workout to the point that I got like kind of mini ripped a little bit. Like I've got,
whatever it takes to get your body moving, you know, that's all it takes.
It really is. And also, too, a lot of people have problems with the gym because of like dysphoria and all sorts of different reasons to not go to the gym. And also, gym memberships cost money. I have a one-time thing that I bought once, and all I have to do is charge it. And that's a video game, you know, the thing that was cost $300. And then also, it takes you completely out of your body in virtual reality. You just, it's just you dancing with zero judgment. And I mean, I got hella fit with it, and people go, "Whoa, Jeff, what did you do?" And I'm like, "I dance, buddy. I put on a weird headset and I dance."
Well, that's what Elvira, Cassandra Peterson, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, said. The legs are last to go. Yeah. If you want to live to be sexy and beautiful into your senior years, as she is, you know, keep dancing, keep moving.
Dancing is the best. It can hit every muscle. It's fun. It's freeing. It's goofy. It reminds you to not take yourself so seriously. And then I challenge other people. And then when I find out that other people have either bought one, I'll like buy them a video game. I like try and like donate to other people who are trying to get one, because I really think it's a good resource for people who are self-conscious of their bodies. Mm-hmm. I know someone who's just, you know, a little bit overweight, but they really have bad associations from high school with the gym, and they are killing it in virtual reality because they take all of that self-consciousness out.
Gyms have changed a lot. I got to tell you, Jeffrey, it's like the gyms that I used to go to 15 years ago today, a young person would be mortified if they were sexist, transphobic, homophobic. It's a completely different landscape in most urban and suburban environments. And part of that is, you know, the body positivity movement. It, like, all young people today are filming themselves for Instagram. Mm-hmm. And if they're, you know, there's a whiff, a smell of them being judgmental or pushy or cruel to other people at the gym, there's people out there waiting to read you to filth.
Yeah. I mean, people have locked gym memberships for posting stuff like that and been absolutely shamed, you know, and it is hard because you are going into a different environment, but you have to realize too, is everybody in there is there working on themselves, and we don't know what their struggle is. There's a lot of, you know, Fausto has chronic back pain.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why he loves muscle, but you know, it's to keep him moving and to keep him healthy and to keep him flexible. You know, and there's so many people that, you know, you talk to and they're just like, I have this problem. That's why I'm working out. I have this problem. That's why I'm working out. So everybody's got their own burden.
Although I take I take an issue with like the term dysmorphia. Because I'm like, I don't think a lot of people that have, you know, issues with their bodies in that manner are struggling with mental health issues. And dysmorphia makes it sound like you're not realistically seeing your body for what it is.
Is that what it means though? Dysmorphia?
Well, that's the term, right? Mm-hmm. So what you see isn't what's really there.
Or what you see is what you want. Is that?
And I would say like dysmorphia is more
dysphoria.
Dysmorphia or dysphoria. It part of it is like, it's not necessarily that there's like, it's just that you have a high expectation of what you want your body to look like. And because it doesn't look like that, it's distressing.
Yeah, but dysphoria, I think, it's something that's very real. It's when it's that moment whenever I, you know, get undressed, and because I haven't had top surgery yet, I, you know, that's my dysphoria, is that isn't correct.
But you know what your body looks like.
I do know what it looks like, and it doesn't feel right.
And it doesn't feel right, exactly. So you have an expectation that doesn't match what you see.
Yeah, so that's where the dysphoria part
comes. But it's not that you're like, you know, you're looking at your body and everybody says you look fine. And you're like, I hate how that looks. You know, it's because it is. I think that's the thing that I hear a lot of young trans people and bodybuilders say And I'm like, but and they've done studies about this, you know, like they say, how much do you weigh? What are your measurements? And they all are super accurate. So it's, it's not that you're like not aware of what you look like. It's that you need or want to look something differently.
Yeah. And I think that's the difference between dysmorphia and dysphoria. And I may be wrong, but I think because those two are different. But here's the bottom line. Sure. Okay. There is one thing that has never changed with gyms, and that's how tiny the curtains are in the showers.
Well, because they don't want you having sex in there.
I know. And it is
hard
to use. So that's why I'm going to start a petition, change the curtains in the bathroom showers of the gym, and maybe I'll come back to you, gyms.
Most of the gyms that have long curtains now.
You don't have to shower at the gym at all. You can come in.
But Jeffrey wants to.
And then leave.
Yeah, I don't even want to work out there. I just want to shower there.
Well, just because you're asexual doesn't mean you don't get your rocks off somehow.
You're like, so much.
I want to see naked people. You know, part of me is like, that is the thing about, like, you know, when you're gay and attracted to other men and you're and just for the heterosexual men who are listening to this, all three of you guys, you know, we are looking at your body. We are like going, oh, wow. You know, and sometimes it's like, you know, Mark's really good at like dissimulating?
Disseminating?
No, when disimulando in English means to, you're not giving away that you're looking at somebody.
Oh.
I'm discreet.
Discreet. Yeah. Whereas I'm like, listen, I've been through a lot of pandemics and near-death experiences and horrible experiences. It's like, I will respectfully, you know, show admiration for you, but at the same time, you know, if I feel like I'm making somebody uncomfortable, I'm gonna, you know, back off. You know, but there is so much beauty to have in this world, and it's like, it's, you know, it's like stopping and smelling the flowers. You're going out. Spring is here in Chicago, and I'm sure in LA as well, and you know, walking around and enjoying these beautiful flowers blossoming in the sidewalk, it's like, aww. You know, or at the gym. You know, part of it is just like, it's inspiring to be around people who are living and living their best life.
Yeah, which is why yesterday I went to the farmer's market and it was so lovely.
What'd you get?
I got grapefruit, and my stuff is just dumb. I got grapefruit and I got juice and kombucha, and
you know, kombucha is out.
It is.
It's out. It's not the hot fermented beverage.
What is?
Now it's acidophilus-based probiotics.
What?
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's the same method, but instead of it's the same organism that makes yogurt. They put it into like carrot juice or ginger and lemonade.
There's got to be a catchier name, though. What's the catchy
probiotic
name?
Probiotic.
No, beverage. See, that's never going to catch on. It's until they get a name like kombucha. It's never going to be the thing. It's got to become like Proby. Oh, have you had Proby? Oh, what is that? Oh, it's my probiotic drink.
Because with the kombucha is very high in sugar still, because it's vinegary. You know, it's you're making vinegar out of tea and sugar. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a symbiotic, but there is yeast in there, you know, to some degree. The SCOBY.
It's good. And in fact, the thing is, so I used to, when I was first getting sober a long time ago, to show good faith to my partner, I went and bought a what are those called? A breathalyzer.
Yeah.
And so that, because sometimes when like if you're being silly or whatever, it can be reminiscent of the times when you were drinking or whatever. And I was like, look, I don't want you to think I'm drinking if I'm in a great mood or whatever, because sometimes I would just, if I would fall off the wagon, I would be in a great mood. And she'd be like, are you drinking? Well, then I got sober and it was like, hey, you're in a really great mood. And I'm like, I just am one. So I got one. And guess what I learned? If you take a sip of kombucha, you will blow off the charts on a breathalyzer.
Oh wow.
Yeah, that's what Lindsay Lohan said.
Or was it Lindsay or Paris Hilton?
It was Lindsay Lohan, and I think it was Lindsay Lohan, and they took kombucha off the shelves at Whole Foods for a while.
What?
Yeah, because of that. And I was like, this is some bullshit.
It is real. It's so real because we used to play with it at parties. I would bring it and it had all these things. And I was always the zero out person because I was sober. Mm-hmm. And so everybody else would go like, how drunk am I? And then I would say, well, you want to see a trick? And then I would, cause I brought kombucha. That's my like non-alcoholic drink that I bring that actually has a tiny bit of alcohol in it.
And, yeah. So there's a probiotic. You can get this at Whole Foods. It's ginger and lemon fermented with acidophilus. They sell, you know, there's a carrot ginger one too. Like you actually can do this on your own. Just mixing a ginger puree, boiling it with water and then letting it cool and adding some honey or sugar. And then just letting that ferment. And then you make your fermented acidophilus beverage that way.
Whoa.
And just like the same way you make kombucha, and it's pretty tasty, you know, and it's like on my birthday, that's what I was, because, you know, Mark and I, at a certain point, you just don't drink anymore because it's like,
yeah,
it's just too much. Although I've been watching reruns of
is hard.
Dynasty.
Yeah.
The 1980s Ooh. Original sitcom, soap opera that feels like a sitcom. And everybody's drinking all day long.
Champagne, caviar.
Oh, what a life. What a life.
And I'm just like, it made me want to drink. Like I was watching it and I was like, that looks really good. Cause it's like, you know, Joan Collins just drinking and drinking wine and champagne and eating caviar and toast. Yeah. It was just like, there's a lot of alcohol in that show.
I know. Same thing with Mad Men. If you're ever trying to quit drinking or smoking, don't watch Mad Men. It is a rough one.
But you don't have a struggle with cigarettes, do you?
Oh, I vape.
Oh, I did vape nicotine.
Oh yeah. Are you kidding me? Oh yeah, because I had quit smoking and then I went into rehab and my mother bought me a bunch of cigarettes and she's like, and I was like, Mom, I quit smoking. She goes, you're going into rehab. This is how wise my mother is. Mm-hmm. She goes, you're going into rehab. You're either going to smoke them or you are going to trade them. And I went in, I wasn't in 30 minutes before I was a smoker because it's all you do in rehab. It's the only thing you have. So I did it. And then when I left, I was like, crap, now I'm a smoker again. And so my brother got me a vape and it's my one vice.
Just the one vice?
Yeah, it's my one.
Well, you're addicted to really, attention, yeah. too. You know, as LGBTQ people plus XYZ, we're the middle children of society, you know, and for a lot of us, being seen, not just heard or but seen in the sense of like being understood and celebrated is really vital for us as for our psychology, for our mental health wellness. And so being on, you know, doing these podcasts or reality TV shows is there's a reason why we've been pioneers in so much of media because it's for us, it's not just vanity. It's about us sharing information about having our stories told and for us as individuals to be acknowledged as human beings.
Yeah. And helping others be seen too, because I think that's the thing that makes me feel better than anything else in the world is whenever I know something, someone else is good for something and I can help someone else get a little bit more limelight or recognition or whatever. Cause it really is. There's a lot of gatekeeping in things. And so like being the people who give a voice to others and allow them to be heard is powerful. It's absolutely addictive to have your friends and other people who have been working hard, who have had the same kind of struggles, get success. Like it's like the most joy.
Well, though, be careful what you wish for. Cause if it comes true and you regret it, then you're just like, oh, what have I done to myself? You know,
if what comes true,
well, just, you know, your desire to having like a strong entertainment career, you know, it's like, I mean, we see some of these big celebrities. I mean, Will Smith at the Oscars, for example, he didn't strike me as a happy person, you know?
Oh, but I don't want
to smack Chris Rock.
We've all wanted to smack Chris Rock, but
yeah, but I have no desire for fame. That's why I've gone into now that, you know, now that's why I'm writing now. And so that's why, because I don't want to be any sort of, I have no desire to be like a recognized on the street person or a big actor or anything. I'm a writer. I've always been a writer. It's been the thing that I love. I do stand up, but I'm in a writer's room now. And I,
can you say who you're writing for?
I'm currently low level on the totem pole assistant style in the Riverdale room.
Aguirre Sacasa.
Mm-hmm.
Tell him we said yeah, hi.
I will. And by the way, it's like the loveliest writer's room. It's like, you know how you hear so many horror stories about writer's rooms. It is the most creative, open. It's like, I'm just such a lucky person and thanks. I don't know. I got really lucky. So,
yeah. So Roberto Aguirre Sacasa, he was a former guest of our show who came on, I believe it was at the time to talk about Big Love.
No, Boys and True.
Good Boys and True, his play, but he also had a history as a writer for Big Love, for Glee.
Yeah.
When Glee didn't suck. he worked on the Sabrina and of course, he's the creative officer of Archie Comics. And yeah. So when we broke the story that Archie Comics had their first gay character of Kevin Keller, that's where we all came together. Dan Parent, Roberto Aguirre Sacasa, and me, and you. A lot of gay people behind Archie Comics.
Yeah. It's very, it's a cool world to have stumbled in. I feel very like super, super lucky. And I don't know. It's cool.
Have they still explored Jughead's non-binary or, you know, asexual nature?
I don't know about any of that stuff, honestly.
Because I always feel like they've done Jughead wrong. In fact, there was a band one time called Jughead's Revenge.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I don't know much on that and on that end and stuff. But yeah, so anyways, life's good. And yeah.
When are we seeing you here in Chicago again?
I don't know. Soon, I'm sure. I have a lot of friends out there. My best friend is Carly Ballerini, who you know as well.
Oh, yes. We had Carly on the show. She won't return our phone calls anymore.
Well, it's not that she won't
you
return.
You say that a lot about a lot of people.
Well, it's just, you know.
Especially you.
But
I know.
With Carly, though, is that she came on the podcast and we talked about
Ellen.
About Ellen. She wanted to talk about Ellen.
She was obsessed about Ellen.
She was kind of obsessed about Ellen and the rumors about Ellen being not too kind to the people that she works with, right? And so we did that podcast. And about 3 weeks later, everything just blew up. Ellen this, Ellen that. People were coming out of the woodworks talking about her. She announced her thing. And so we're like, Carly, you should come back and talk about it. And she was just kind of like wincing.
Well, it's a small community.
Yes.
And when you're LGBT and you're in entertainment, it's an even smaller community and everybody talks about each other. Mm-hmm. And we've known about Ellen. We knew about Todrick Hall being an
asshole.
We've
heard.
Obviously we don't have evidence about anything, but you know, we have people coming up to us that we trust, that we have a relationship, and they say, I worked with this person and I had a really negative experience for these reasons.
Yeah. Or this is what I heard from this person, da da da.
You know, and so then when Todrick Hall went on Big Brother and, you know, and I noticed this, like, you know, with Perez Hilton, people who are sort of like, they're in entertainment and media and they come across as being very insecure. When they put themselves in a reality show environment, then all hell breaks loose because they're not able to sort of like navigate conflict in a constructive way. Right.
Yeah,
and so for you guys being trans, you know, you guys are all friends, but you know, that Care Bear quality to your relationship might actually sabotage the future of the project. Because ultimately, we are addicted to conflict, like Dynasty.
Mm.
And you always have to have something going horribly wrong.
Like this podcast.
It has to be on the verge of a collapse, you know? So you talking about, like, being lazy about your testosterone replacement therapy and being scared of needles and all that other stuff gets people like, oh, you know, that anything that gets people's goats like that is going to like get people to tune in and see what happens next. But see, like on your castmates, none of them are angry at you. None of them are like,
yet.
Jeffrey, you suck.
Yeah. Well, you know? we there's plenty of conflict. There's plenty of conflict to come because life is not always pretty. And and we do our best to make it look pretty in real life, but it's not.
So you're saying like in future episodes of Being Trans, it's all hell breaks loose.
Nothing is thrown. I'll say that.
Nothing's thrown. So you get into a fight with somebody.
You don't toss a phone at your assistant or anything?
Oh my God, no. That would be amazing. And the amazing part would be me having an assistant.
Or a phone. You're talking just through a computer right now.
I don't know why that made me laugh so hard. Oh, because I miss this banter.
I miss you, Jeffrey J.
Jeffrey, you're my love, my soulmate. My brother from another mother and father.
I'm so glad you've come back into her life. And, you know, I'm glad we didn't ruin Ellen's career together. So you feel comfortable calling us.
No. And also, Carly's amazing. And she does not feel that way. Maybe just like have Carly on anyways and be like, hey, well, the Ellen story's over. That's old news anyways.
She recorded her last show.
You know, Ellen just keeps, like Madonna, keeping her name on people's mouths, saying or doing something that's just going to, like, piss people off. Like Madonna this week, she's selling, this is a real
NFTs.
Non-fungible tokens, you know, crypto shit. You know, when somebody's getting involved with crypto, you know they're losing their mind, right? So she's selling NFTs, which is a digital certificate of authenticity, pointing to a video, a computer generated image, video, CGI, of her giving birth to a tree through her vagina. I think it's brilliant.
I know. I love her. Here's the thing. I do too. And I think the only thing people are bumping on is the NFT thing. But here's the thing also, the NFT, the proceeds are going towards like a
charity,
a woman shelter or something. Yeah, it's going to charity. And she's just doing her regular old weird Madonna thing. To me, it seems completely on brand. Somebody was like tweeting, like, okay, you know, this is a boomer thing to do. It's like, no, who cares? This is Madonna doing a thing that she says is about motherhood and about body positivity, and she's doing it for charity. It's the only thing people are bumping on is the NFT thing. So as long as the person who's buying the NFT is like, look, I know this is going to charity and may not increase in value, I love it.
Well, the thing about it is, you know, in Madonna in the late 90s, early 2000s, all the way up to, you know, Evita, like everybody was like, change their opinion of Madonna after Evita, you know. I don't know why.
Well, but a lot of people hated her before and hated her even more after.
Well, in Argentina, people were really mad. They were like, this whore is, you know, portraying Evita. And she's, you know, Evita's considered like a complicated political figure because she was the spouse of a fascist. But also people believe that Evita was murdered by her husband because she was a progressive socialist.
Oh, whoa.
And so she was like, imagine if Hitler's wife was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That's an exaggeration. But what would Hitler do to his wife? He'd be like, oh, she had an accident. She has cancer. Oh, the treatment is, you know, we have to lobotomize her brain. You know, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that, you know, if you have ovarian or uterine cancer, lobotomy is not, even back then, was not the form of treatment.
Well, I think they gave her the lobotomy for something else, right?
Because she was suffering from pain. Yeah, to keep her quiet. They wanted her basically brain dead. So it was like One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest at the end when Jack Nicholson is lobotomized because he's like, he's stirring up a revolution in that environment, you know, and Nurse Ratched can't take it anymore. And so has him lobotomized, you know, and I think, you know, to some degree, it's like, as Madonna as this populist, complicated, political and historical figure, you know, Argentinians were mad as hell when they found out. And, you know, Madonna wasn't content just playing her. She insisted they flew to Argentina and filmed a lot of scenes in historic landmarks. And Argentinians, like, never been fans of the musical. They feel like it's, you know, slanderous to their culture and to their history. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, Madonna, I like living in a world with Madonna. We went to see Madame X, which was like, for her fans, they were just like, when is she going to sing Express Yourself? When is she going to sing, you know? And it was like, it was this artful theatrical performance that was weird. It was very, you know, late 80s. There was like, you know, art films in it. Most of the music couldn't be recognized. Half of the show was even Madonna singing. Like, it was like a band of, you know, ethnomusicology and, you know, singers from Portugal and from Brazil and other cultures
Africa.
And it was just a beautiful theatrical experience that Madonna happened to be a part of it. And in the middle of the show, she takes a Polaroid camera. And I think she's like taking sexy photos of herself and she's like hustling the audience for money.
Yeah.
And it was for a charity. Yeah. And I was just like, this is the Madonna we deserve.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the Madonna people want.
No. And that's the thing. I think that she's an artist about it. And I really love it a lot. And maybe the thing to do is just say like, hey, this is not what you guys want as just more of my old stuff. This is me doing what I want. So if you don't want to be a part of that, I get it. Don't come, because that's what you're going to get.
I just, you know, worry about future generations not being weird, not wanting to be wonderfully weird, you know, and I noticed this in a lot of youth culture and Drag Race and stuff like that and trans culture. They all want to like fit in. They're like, they look at us as harming them because we're so strange or unusual.
Are we?
I think we're making the world a better place for everybody. And it's certainly, you know, documented and proven, but you know, there is propaganda, there's shopping culture, there's capitalism, shit. Twitter and Facebook is, you know, single-handedly trying to change the way young people think about politics and weirdos and strange things. And, you know, it's a difficult space to be this iconoclast, as somebody who breaks icons.
Yeah, but I do think there's also a good amount of weirdness and such. And sometimes the mainstream is all that breaks through. I have a friend, Toddy, who was on, I don't do any spoilers or anything, was on Call Me Mother. And they are a drag king who I think is the most wonderfully weird, amazing human. And some of the things that they do, I've never seen before.
Yeah, that's the thing about drag right now, is that there's so much money to be made. And, you know, so many marginalized people have aspirations in that space that everybody's like, you know, second guessing themselves and trying to give people what they think they want to see. And the job of an artist, as Madonna says, is to disturb the peace. Or that's disturbs the peace is the writer who said that
James Baldwin
said that. Madonna quoted him in her show.
Oh,
and you know, disturbing the peace means telling people your vantage point, your unique perspective. It's not about you know, saying, oh, like, you know, this is, I noticed this on, and this is a huge thing that bothers me, and drag queens are really guilty of this, especially LGBT people who are creating content. They go on social media, they're like, what should my next episode, my podcast, be about? What should my next song be about? And I'm like, we're following you. You tell us. Yeah. You're the shepherd. We're the flock.
Dang.
Otherwise, you're an asshole. You're just pandering to us. You're literally asking us, what do you want to see? And I'm like, it pisses me off, because then you're not really an artist. You're just a capitalist. You're just a product maker. You're trying to get us to buy t-shirts that we don't need. But speaking of, you can get Feast of Fun t-shirts at feastoffun.com/store. What kind of t-shirts should we be designing next? let us know in the comments.
See, or buy one that's already made. Like, our not shaving gives me more time for misbehaving.
I still have that shirt. I have worn it for years, and it's still one of my favorite shirts. It's like one of my only shirts that have lasted multiple years unstained.
Ah.
Yeah.
It's well, like, you're it's my greatest on shirt
because
it.
I get to wear it on. I get to wear it ironically because I clearly barely have to shave. So.
Well, you shave other parts of your body, right? Brazilian?
Nope.
No?
Yeah.
It's a jungle down there?
Yeah.
On the next episode of Being Trans, Jeffrey J gets a Brazilian wax.
Oh my God. Amazing. Oh, well, I love you guys so much.
I love you too, Jeffrey. Congratulations on the new series.
Thank you so much.
I'll be listening to it all.
Being Trans can be found anywhere fabulous podcasts are found. You can go to Lemonada. So it's lemonade. Mm-hmm. In Spanish, but the word lemon, so it's a little confusing. Lemonadamedia.com/show/being. And Jeffrey and looks like you've been photoshopped into the cast.
I know. People say that too. That was like an 8-hour, it was a really long photo shoot. And I was in, we were there the whole time. I don't know why it looks like I'm photoshopped in.
Because you're on the far left, and it could have been because your schedule is really busy.
It was now. Like, listen,
you got one. You got 15 minutes with me. Make it count. Let's go.
I don't know why things happen the way they happen, but I'm happy to be here, and that's going to be my T-shirt.
I'm happy you're here, and I'm happy you're queer.
I love you guys so much.
And people can follow you on Elon Musk's new social media website, Twitter, at Hey Jeffrey J. Instagram,
yeah,
too.
On everything. Yeah, everything is Hey Jeffrey J.
Because you used to have Hey Jeffrey J.
Yeah, but some things that was too many characters.
Oh.
So I lost a Hey.
Because you were like examining like, what's up, Jeffrey J? Yo, Jeffrey J.
It was always Hey Jeffrey Hey. He was always Hey Hey, because that's how you'll notice if I ever say anything. It's like my go-to. I like Hey Hey because I think it's fun and it's not professional, and I hate being professional.
It doesn't make you sound like you're a Happy Days character.
Yeah, but aren't I?
I think, you know, if they reboot Happy Days, they got to cast you in there.
Yeah, I'm like the bus boy.
Would the Happy Days, would that be like from like the 2000s?
Yeah, I guess so, right?
Because that's like when I was a kid in the 70s, the Happy Days was, you know,
20 years ago. Yeah. Well,
15, okay. 16 years ago.
this is the first time this podcast has made me sad.
Oh.
So we're doing our job.
It doesn't seem that way because there was a big, you know, a shift in identity in the 60s. So the 1950s seemed a lot different than the 70s. But, you know, the 2000s don't really seem that much different than today, right?
No, except I wore a lot more denim.
In the 2000s?
Mm-hmm.
It could be like, you know, like Rent the Musical is the Happy Days of its time, you know?
So
true.
Happy.
I agree with that.
Only instead of Happy Days, it's more like Bittersweet Days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jeffrey, I love you so much.
Goodbye, Jeffrey.
I love you too. Bye. I'll see you soon.
Soon.
Jeffrey J lives in Los Angeles, California. He's gone Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Follow him on social media. Hey, Jeffrey J, just how it sounds like with two F's.
Exactly like that.
And I'm on Feast of Fun and Fausto Fernos on Instagram.
And I'm Mark Filion. That's Mark with a C, F-E-L-I-O-N.
And you can follow me and see almost nude, barely legal photos of me completely naked on Instagram.
Muscle posing, right?
Just naked too. Naked. Yeah.
I mean, some photos of you being all sexy.
Yeah. And
jock strap with your butt out.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of financial support of people like you. If you do want me to sweat in a shirt and send it to you, it's $75, all postage paid within the continental United States. If it's overseas, please cover the difference. You can send us a donation at Cash App, $ Fausto Fernos, or Venmo or PayPal at Feast of Fun. Mm-hmm. So paypal.me/feastoffun, venmo.com/feastoffun.
Mm-hmm. Or cashier's check made out to cash.
American Express will do nicely, but thank you.
If you do want to send us something, you can send it to Feast of Fun at 5315 North Clark Street, number 242, Chicago, Illinois, 60640. And all our contact information is on our website at feastoffun.com/contact. Slash contact.
You know, our site is actually designed logically. Like, so if you want to donate, you go to feastoffun.com/donate. Mm. If you want to go shopping and buy a t-shirt, it's feastoffun.com/store. Yeah, I should have shop also redirect there, but
yeah, why not?
Give me a break, people. It's just
stuff to do.
We got shit to do. Hey guys, remember our sister or brother podcast, Let's Grow Big Together on LGBTQ bodybuilding, is also available where fine podcasts are found. And once again, Being Trans, a project of Lemonada Media, is available where fine podcasts are found, lemonadamedia.com. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.